I have just had my third conversation with Izzy, and we go into books and podcasts quite a lot. We start off in parenting and anime and responsibility. And then we go into Esther Perel, Mating in Captivity, a little bit. We talk about Jocko Willink, who's book Extreme Ownership, I think. Izzy raves about, so I'll be getting a copy of that one. I really speak about the importance of me making sure that I am resourced enough to be out in the world, really, to deal with what comes. Instead of abdicating my ownership of myself and my experience of me by saying, you are triggering me and hence you need to shut up because I can't deal with this. Yeah. So dive into this potentially triggering episode, but I hope not. And if it is, I hope that you deal with it because that's kind of what ownership is about, and that's where we end up in how freeing it is to be able to deal with the world regardless of what feelings and emotions pop up. So have fun. I sure had.
Beautiful new year.
I am great. And it is, today is the first day that it's been almost around zero, but it's a crisp, sunny, not a cloud in the sky day. So I went for a walk before this conversation.
That's nice. Yeah, that's nice. I went for a run. Yes, that's good. Yes, yeah. So. I actually started now doing morning runs. So because every gym here is closed right now due to COVID, obviously. So, and we think that it will go for longer than they say. Yeah. They say till 14th of January, but I think it will go for longer. So I rather get into a habit of running because, yes. Yeah, exercising at home, stretches and go for a run.
Yeah. I actually finished watching something yesterday that is way off my radar. So
what was
my youngest, he's 17 and he's into anime.
Mm-hmm.
Like cartoon manga, right?
Yeah.
And I've been, you know, wondering, I've been asking him, what's the thing? What is it that you like about it? And yeah, you know, is there any particular that you really like? And so he told me before Christmas, he said, yeah, there's a show called Run with the Wind that I really like. And mm-hmm. I was like, okay, what about it do you like? And, you know, couldn't get any good answer out of it.
Yeah.
70, just having him say, the show, that was enough, you know, precisely. I like everything about it. Okay, so and then he actually started asking me. It was probably maybe even the end of November he told me this. He's like, have you watched it yet? And he's like, no, I haven't. And then I was like, where do I watch it? How do I?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know about Crunchyroll?
No.
No. Well, if you were into anime, you would know about Crunchyroll. So Crunchyroll is like kind of a Netflix, but for anime.
Mm-hmm.
So it was on there and it was 23 episodes, this Run with the Wind. And I was like, okay. And so I started to watch it. The first episode, and you know, every 3 minutes there's a 2-minute break for commercials. And I just went, I cannot stand this.
Yes.
And he said, you can get a free, a 1 month or half a month free trial as a premium if you want to. And then you don't have the commercials. So I did that because he was asking, have you watched it yet?
Yeah.
No, I haven't. And I felt like a really bad mom. And you feel guilty. Yes. And so after Christmas, I registered on a premium account on Crunchyroll and watched a couple of episodes. And it's like, you know, it's like, it's kind of stereotypical. There's these Japanese young guys and just, and only in Japanese. So I have to watch the subtitles because I can't just hear it, right?
Yeah.
And I'm usually darning socks or doing sashiko embroidering or something. So I told him I watched a couple of episodes. He's like, what do you think? He was like, well. And then it was, I think over the weekend, I decided that, no, I'm going to watch this.
Mm-hmm.
So I finished watching it yesterday, all 23 episodes.
Oh my gosh.
I skipped one or two because there were little, like, summaries and there were a couple.
Yeah.
So I skipped two or three. But I got it.
Okay.
How
did you like it? Like, how?
Precisely. That was the thing. I think I get what draws my son to this series.
And what was it?
It's a series about community, about coming together.
Because
it's about 10 guys that live in a house and one of them has the dream to get these 10 guys to do a run, a long college run, because they're college students, all of them. And it is about coming together, starting to train, qualifying, qualifying for the qualifier for the race. And, you know, these steps. And it's, you know, about 10 characters, different, you know, attitudes. There's a couple who just love running and are really, really, really fucking good at it. And then there's the manga lover who doesn't do anything but read manga series. And he doesn't have any stamina at all. He's like
to run,
you know, and he's just so it is about coming together as a team and what you do as a team, and I think that is what draws my son to it, and I really enjoyed it
because
I was thinking, you know, I'd watched like 5-6 episodes, like I've gotten it now. Now I've shown my son enough that I'm interested in what he thinks.
Yeah.
You know.
But it's about understanding a little bit more than just, you know.
Yeah.
Like, did I read somewhere this? Or it came up in conversation that often we just watch things or we look at things, but we actually don't see those things. Like, you know, like we are absent. We see something, but we do not really try to find the message.
Level.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, and like as you say, like first few episodes, you would say to your son, "Yeah, watch it," but I don't get it. But now you try to get it, try to understand, try to see his perspective a little bit. Why it's something that interests him, and it's actually very interesting that you got into this deep. Deeper meaning of this manga series about the community. It's really, really cool.
And I mean, that's what I picked up from it. But knowing my son, you know, I can kind of see that, okay, this thing, that actually fits with the person that he has grown into becoming. I can kind of link it to traits of his, experiences of his, wishes and longings of his that has popped up, you know, throughout the years. So, and there's one thing about him that I really appreciate, and that is that he has always been very, very good at surrounding himself with mostly boys, but they have always been very, very caring towards each other. You know,
that's
if they haven't
good.
Seen each other for a week, it's like hugs. You
that's
know, when
really
they
good.
Were, even when they were like starting to get into that, oh no, that can be really awkward.
Yeah.
They would do that. So there's a softness to him in that way that I pick up on in this Run with the Wind anime series.
Because, you know, like I see it in jujitsu community. I see it with my friends who have kids, because I don't have kids. So it's a little bit hard for me to speak for myself in this regard. But, and I guess from my experience, it's in Poland, we have this saying, I'm going to say it in Polish and then try to somehow translate. So it's, z kim się zadajesz, takim się stajesz, which means depending who you stay with, you surround yourself with, you become this sort of person. Yeah. And I see that, like, for example, in jiu-jitsu community, we have a lot of young people there. And because they are with this other older guys and women, and it kind of shapes them. I see their behavior not being so rough, let's say, as majority of teenagers that I see on the streets. Like they are a little bit different, in my opinion. Yes, from my perspective, I obviously don't know how they are at home and what they're going through, but from this little part of their life,
what
you know,
you
when
see.
They attend. Yeah, and then I also have a few friends and they have kids, and sometimes I am just shocked, like, with their behavior, you know, like I can imagine that it's very hard to be a parent. Like that's beyond the way of, like, beyond my thinking. I can only imagine that. And as I said, I don't have kids, so I really cannot relate to this, like, 100%. But sometimes I'm just terrified of this, what those kids absorb, what they learn from, and, like, how everything is shaping them. I even recently, I'm reading a book. It's already a long time written. It's from Esther Perel. Mating in Captivity.
Yeah, it's
and
a good one.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And she says that depending how we were shaped in our young years when we were kids, how we were shaped by our parents and how their love looked and how we were loved, this how, like, it shapes our future way of loving other people and loving ourselves. So it's a lot of information there, but it's so interesting. I just find it very fascinating. And though I knew that, you know, but it kind of, I think it's nice to read it somewhere and having, like, a confirmation of something like this. Because, you know, because I was raised in Poland, my parents, like, they are still together, and on a certain level they do love each other. Like, I don't perceive it as a couple love, but more as a friendship. But I guess it is what it is, you know. Like, they were raised differently, and having certain image of their understanding of the relationship shaped me to the person that I am now. And I had a lot of, like, problems with jealousy, and it took a lot of time for me to work on it, you know. Like, I would often fall into, like, thinking, well, I can do everything by myself, I don't need this other person. Like, it's good to think that someone is independent, but I think then this may create some struggles within the relationship, because then we don't have this urge of communicating, of, like, trying to figure out things. And now when I keep on seeing everyone, like, I will divorce, like, you know, like, I think people don't also put enough effort in this one relationship that they get into. And like, we don't remember that it's an ongoing work on the relationship. And, you know, that way I like when you say about your son that you see the community that he has, and it's really nice to hear that it's a community of people with some values, like they, and that they are caring to each other or for each other. But I think he also in some way learned from you, like to surround himself with the community of people who care about other people.
And it, I mean, I would say this is probably the thing that is the one of the hardest of being a parent. It is this both like realization that I really help shape my kids for better or for worse. You know, because the good in me, excellent. The bad in me, you know, bunny ears, is like, oh no, what have I done? Right? So there's a quite a big degree of I don't know, almost surrendering to the fact that I've done the best that I can. In any moment, I believe, and I will not let this belief go, I believe we do the best we can, even if the best I can is shit.
Yeah, precisely. Well,
it's still, because if I could do better in the moment, I would do better.
Exactly, exactly.
So I try not to beat myself up over the parent that I was, because the parent that I was the best parent that I could be.
Yeah, yeah.
Back then. But I do think that those, it's like those under the surface undercurrents of who I am as a person, they are so much more influential than maybe we perceive them to be or even want them to be.
Because, you know, like if I think about my parents, you know, like I think they did the best job they could do, and I think they did a great job taking into consideration the way they were raised, the environment, the generally surrounding, the people who, like, the environment they were growing up in. And I don't mean only their parents, but also their friends, the community, the country that we grow up in. They did tremendously well. Like, they did a fantastic job, you know? And they also gave us a lot of freedom in different areas, like certain things, like talking about intimacy, talking about sex, having sex with another person. Those weren't the things that we would talk about. We wouldn't discuss it, and it wasn't usual to do so in my country. I mean, it's still a topic of taboo. But there are many other aspects that they cherished, and they allow us to grow within those aspects, within those, let's say, boundaries. Yes. And I mean boundaries in a good way in this regard. You know, and I think I remember, like, one time we had a family meeting. It was ages ago. We had a family meeting. There were my parents and my aunt and my cousin. And my cousin, she says, it's like, yeah, if I could live my life again, I'll change this, that, and this, you know, like a lot of things she named. And I'm thinking, like, I kind of, it was interesting to me, the question and the way how she approached it, because I was sitting there and thinking, it's like, I wouldn't change a thing. And, you know, my mom sometimes says, I wish I could give you more things when you were growing up. I wish I could buy you more things. I wish I could help you more. And I said to her, I had everything that I needed, you know, and we can always think that, oh, we could have more, or our parents could give us more. But A, they did the best they could at that specific time, as you said yourself, you know, like there are so many different factors to consider. And the other thing is that I really am happy with what I got from my parents, how, like, how they raised me, you know. And yeah, and now at that point I have some of my own battles to pick up and to figure that out. But at least I can see it, that I have some battles that I have to figure out, you know? Because maybe if I would be raised differently, I may have not seen that.
And it's interesting to hear you say this, and it makes me very, very, very happy to hear you say this, mm-hmm. because it's like regret or wishing that things were something other than what they were. It's like, what's really the point to that?
Yeah.
Where does that energy take you? Sure, you can look at it and you can kind of maybe, you know, theoretically think that, okay, if my parent hadn't gotten divorced, then maybe this, that, and the other thing. But everything that's happened to me has shaped me into who I am today. So it's like I like who I am.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's also, I don't know, there's something interesting about this. Everything that has happened to me has shaped me into who I am.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a friend who said the other day, or I read something he'd written the other day, saying, well, maybe that's not true. Maybe it is what you see ahead of you that shapes mm-hmm. who you are. And I just went, oh, that's a piece of tankespia. Because he's like, you know, you can look ahead and you can, you know, oh, that holiday I will take, or that party mm-hmm. I'm going to, mm-hmm. or that book that I'm going to read, or that run I'm going to take tomorrow, and sort of be shaped by the feeling that you know you will be having, or that you want to be having mm-hmm. as you do that. And that's just, oh, that's,
you know, it's actually our choice. I was just thinking now when we talked about those things, like, A, it's our choices also, like, we make how we decide to look to our now and our future, like how we want to perceive it, because I think we always have a choice, and it's hard. It's sometimes really, really hard. But I think we need to try to look to the things from more promising perspective, you know, then keep on beating yourself down. Because if you have done something, you cannot change it. You cannot change the past. Yes, it already happened. Yes, you're now in this current situation, and you can influence how you behave, you know, how you act on the things. This is something you have an influence on. You have an impact on this. It's your behavior. But you cannot influence the behavior of other people. You cannot really decide what will happen for you in the future, because there are so many factors to happen. But you can influence how you react to those things. And now I was thinking, and I that was just a random thought right now, about what we said, that, well, what our you know, we don't have regrets about the past. Yes, we don't have regrets about, like, how we were growing up, or, like, or at least I don't have. I should say for myself, I don't have. But I think it's also, it was my choice, how I chosen to use that experience, you know. I chosen to not beat myself down because I didn't have this little thing. No, I decided that, okay, it wasn't all the time, you know, sunshine, and I don't know, we could do everything whatever we wanted. No, but all those things, I find them as an experience I use them as an experience for me to take, to look at it. I was like, okay, and I can choose what I will do with that. So it's, again, it's our choice. It's how we decide to, what we decide to do with those things that were given us in the past. And of course, maybe there weren't, like, a tremendous amount of amazing things, and we didn't have amazing life in the past. well, we had a life. And it's really up to us what we're going to do with that.
And
I
think one of the things that makes people kind of putting themselves in victim mode or staying in victim mode is not really the, oh, this happened in my past. My parents divorced, you know. But rather, if you use it as an excuse, my parents divorce, hence I am incapable of being in a long-term love relationship. Because my parents divorced, you know, when you use it, I know people use that as an excuse. Not necessarily that, perhaps.
Yeah, this is what I don't say, like I don't have enough knowledge to kind of debate the topic, psychological topic of that specific situation, but I just sometimes I wonder if we use those past things as an excuse for something for us, like, oh, I cannot do that because of blah 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 in the past.
I think that is very common.
Mm.
You know, I was beaten by my parent, and hence that is why I beat my children.
Yeah, that's like,
okay, but you know, there are people who were beaten by their parents who don't beat their children.
Yeah.
You know,
because they don't want them to experience the same.
Precisely, right? So again, I think that is the, when my friend wrote about what everything that happened actually isn't shaping who you are, it is what's going on in the future. I think what he's pointing to is when you use it as an excuse. When you use it as a crutch in a way to get out of something. I can't do that because of this. I can't be that because of that.
We often try to blame someone else or something else for our things that didn't work out for us, or, you know, or are not working out for us. And it's about taking that freaking responsibility for the things you do, you say, you think, and we are not perfect, you know, and we're going to make a lot of mistakes. We're going to say a lot of things that we regret. But the thing is just to take those things, to reflect on those things that we did, and just trying to do better in the future. Some time ago, it was before I did actually Alt MBA, I was reading a book of a guy who spent many years in military and then used that experience to run his business and to help other businesses to grow. And his name is Jocko Willink. And yeah, and I'm generally like, I like the things about like army, and you know, like I'm kind of interested by this. And I said in the past that I guess if not problems with my eyes, because and not the past issues with epilepsy, because in the past I had it, I probably would go to army, you know, like I would try that. Mm-hmm. I really would like that. I like the intense physical life that is there. And I think I like the fact that they need to face a lot of fear, a lot of struggles, and sometimes some of them, they come out even stronger from those experiences. He also has a podcast, and he did some interviews with different people, but one of them was a woman who during war, she actually lost, I think, her leg and half of her face. And she was lucky enough that they were able to restruct her face. But the leg, she lost the leg. But this woman is doing the things that I would never imagine myself doing, you know, so many things at the same time. And some of them are extreme physical things, like climbing Mount Everest, or, you know, like, wow. And I know that it's, everyone cannot be like this, and that like this woman or Jocko Willink himself, there are maybe some specific examples that managed to take that experience and shift it into their benefit. To not just I think they decide to not look to the dark side. It's like, well, I still have life in front of me, and I can make it miserable.
Or at least
not
stay in the dark side.
Yeah, don't stay. Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly. You have a choice. You will sit down, cry every day, and make it miserable, or you move ahead. And you know, like, so about Joko, in his book, he talks a lot about taking that responsibility for the things that we do. You know, like, we really, sometimes we need to detach from, like he says, our emotions, our feelings. And it's not to be like a robot, but to be a human being still, because emotions are a big part of us. And this is what makes us more human. But you sometimes need to have those emotions in check. Like, you need to have control over your emotions. Your emotions cannot have control over you. And like this, you will be able to see things from different perspective, you know, to see maybe bigger picture. And as I'm like, for me, his book, Extreme Ownership, that was the book. For me, this book was one of the most amazing things when it comes to my life management, my like work management. Like, that was like, this book was really working for me, because a lot of those books about time management or management in general, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm rolling my eyes. But this book really worked for me. He's really into the point, and his podcast is great too. I really like to listen to that. And I, like, when I was going through the burnout, I went to the dark side, you know, like, I, at that time, I feel like I was choosing more of the dark side than trying to be to look to the things from a different, better perspective. But somehow at some point, everything started shifting for me. Like, I think I was strong enough to actually keep on trying to look to this brighter side, let's call it. Yes, to choose things that actually will make me feel better. And if I make a mistake, I don't beat myself for that mistake. Or if I have, like, because sometimes I would like overthink things, and I would go like, it's like, okay, but in my brain, I think I have a very creative brain, because the scenarios that my brain came up with were amazing. You could probably write a film based on those scenarios. And you know, I would just, most of the time, those would be really negative scenarios. And I would like downward spiral, keep on finding all these negative scenarios, and my brain would be eaten by this. My self-esteem, my well-being would be eaten by those dark thoughts. And you know, like, at some point I was like, no, I really need to fight those things. And I think I do have like a fighting character. I do all the time the fight sports. I did boxing in the past, now martial arts like jiu-jitsu. This is all where you have to really struggle through the things. You have to push through things that you think you cannot do it. Keep going, keep trying, and change something if you think that this doesn't work, and still keep trying, you know. And I was like trying meditation. I was trying, I don't know, I read some books. I tried running. I tried different form of exercise just to find this one or few that makes me feel like myself. That, like, I'm not a person who would sit and meditate a lot. Like, I for me, going for a run is a form of meditation. For me, going to doing jiu-jitsu and doing the rolls is a form of meditation. It's like a puzzle that I'm trying to figure out. So for me, just trying to sit on the ground and keep meditating for hours didn't really work that well. But I still found a form that suits me, that I will do. It's short. It's a little bit different. But it helps me. It helps me to shift into that better perspective, let's say, like, to push away a little bit those dark ways of perceiving the reality and perceiving the things that have happened to me and that may come toward me. So, yeah, I think it's just, it's a lot in our control. We need to be brave enough to do that step, to actually freaking do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. To own it. So
to right. own it, precisely.
And it's so interesting. The friend that I was speaking about, Johan, who had written about, you know, mm-hmm. you're shaped by your thoughts mm-hmm. about the future. He's a big fan of Jocko Willink. And I've never really, it's like I've heard it and thought, oh, well. And then somebody on Twitter wrote that the best Tim Ferriss episode ever on his podcast was a 2015 interview with Jocko Willink. So that got me curious. So it's like, okay, I'll find that one. And I listened to it. And was quite amazed. Because, you know, I hadn't even looked at this man before. He really looks like a military jock. He's like big, bulky. He's like a gorilla.
Bald. Yeah, yeah, you're like
he's
a gorilla.
Like, he's really like a gorilla. So he's like, and I just went, oh my God, I'm going to hate this. Because there's a type of American maleness, let's put it that way, that is apparent in quite a lot of prominent podcasts, etc., that I just can't stand. It's like, whoa, and it's just throwing every, and it's like, oh, thank you, but no thank you. I can't stand it. So I was thinking, oh my God, this is going to be 2-3 hours of this. And it wasn't. It was quite eye-opening to hear this brute of a man, a physical brute of a man, be so open, be so reflective. Tim has his question. He asks a question. Yeah. And instead of Jocko just answering, because this is what you're supposed to, you know, he actually took it in and sat with it and was silent for half a minute before coming up with thoughts rather than here's my answer. You know, so he's like this visible image of him and what I've heard of him, because a lot of what people say about him is how amazing he is at how his physical prowess and his fighting spirit and all of those, like, you know, superlative words of how amazing he is and just showing something completely different. So
yes.
I haven't listened to his podcast, but I will.
Yeah, I will try to find the one that he did with this woman who was in army. She lost her leg.
Yeah,
I'll try to look for that.
Yeah,
I will get you this one. I really recommend The Extreme Ownership, the book he wrote, because it the chapters are divided in the way that first he talks about his military experience, the experience from war, and then whatever lesson was in there, he translates this to running a business or managing yourself in general. And it's really very interesting. The parts about him talking about the war and what was happening there, that was really, really well written and very interesting. Like a little bit of an eye opener for what is happening in there, because we know it's horrible, but that's it. You know, like we say it's horrible, it's bad, people are dying, but it's just terrifying. It's terrifying how it is. And so, and in some of his older actually podcasts, I came across one of them recently. He reads books, and sometimes he reads books from people who also were in the war, and the descriptions are just so scary. And together with his the person, the like an admin person or someone who takes care about the sound, they have conversations and they talk about those books, about the things that happened during war. It's really really good podcast. This and, but it's intense. It's sometimes it's very, very intense, you know, because it's a lot to take to keep listening about all this brutal and horrible things that happen to people. But also Tim Ferriss, like, I love his podcasts. I really can, like, keep, like, it's one of my favorite podcasts that I listen to. And usually the most interesting people come from, like, I find them through his podcast. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was listening to one of the recent Tim Ferriss podcasts that I've been mentioning and writing about and speaking about in these conversations with people too is the one he had with Diana Chapman in the fall.
I haven't listened to this one.
Listen to this
okay.
one.
Okay.
It is really, really good. But what struck me then was because I appreciate Tim Ferriss, but I don't read, you know, I haven't subscribed to his podcast. It's not as if I listen to every episode. I find an episode here and there and can kind of appreciate a lot of things that he does, but I don't regularly. I'm not a Tim Ferriss fan in that way. But it's been interesting to listen to, because I've listened to podcasts for 10, 12 years or something. So listening to him and picking up on how he is evolving as a podcast host, because he really, really is. He's gotten to be quite good. And the episode with Diana is one of those where he's so willing to step into it. He's so willing to be there as a person rather than, here I am, Tim Ferriss, the podcast host of one of the most popular podcasts around. You know, it's like, actually, no, here I am. I'm Tim Ferriss, the person.
Precisely.
With these fear, these hang-ups, these beliefs. So I appreciate that. And I can, you know, having listened to him for many years, even though not everything, I can hear how he's growing.
Yeah.
Because I think he is showing more and more of him.
Yes.
Just sort of turning more and more professional. It's like, well, he is by being more himself.
Yeah. I think, you know, the more you do, the more you have the conversation with different people, the more you learn by yourself. Like, you discover different things, you just dive into different topics, and sometimes you have you may know nothing about certain things. And like, it's, if you're a podcast host, it doesn't mean that you will know every single thing. No, and he shows that. Look, I don't know, I keep thinking about this and that all the time for a very long time. I talk to my friends about this, and you know, he puts his experience there on the line. Sometimes I like how he says sometimes that this episode is becoming my personal therapy. So, you know.
Yeah, precisely. Because I think partly they are, and the Diana Chapman episode most definitely is.
Okay, I'll check this one definitely.
Yeah, I think you will like that also from an intimacy standpoint.
Okay. I'll check this. I don't know, maybe I need to check because I have added one of the, I'll check because maybe I have added this to my listening list, but I tend to shift like between like Joko podcast, Tim Ferriss podcast, Jordan Peterson, I also listen to some of his podcast, or his daughter, Michaela Peterson, but Jordan's, I like his podcast more because he really digs into a topic, but they are very long and very heavy for me to digest because there is so much information. The guy is super duper smart, but there's so much information that sometimes it's really hard to digest. And those podcasts, usually his podcasts are like 2 hours long. So, a lot to take in.
There's one episode. I don't listen to Jordan B. Peterson's podcast generally either, but there's one episode, or if it's two, where he speaks to a
man from, I don't know, Mali? No, well, some African country who was then in Germany as a student, and then was caught by the U.S. and put in Guantanamo and whatnot, like jailed for 10 years.
I know
that show.
I have it in my. I'll just find it very quickly.
Because that man, is just amazing. That is, it's like listening to this African man speaking. Is he's a mensch.
Yes, it's season 4, episode 49, Enhanced Interrogation Techniques. Mohamed Audislai. I think it's like, And I know that Michaela, his daughter, she also did an episode with this guy. I think first she did an episode with him and then Jordan did another one. But he's just,
Because that one is also, it's long.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I listened to it in 2 or 3, like, I couldn't.
Yes,
you know, you
precisely.
Have to break and give yourself room to breathe because what this man shares is just horrifying in many ways and so extremely hopeful in other ways because he has a love for man that just blows my mind.
Yes.
Talk about not like going down the path of regrets and you know, just. It happened.
Exactly. I think this podcast is actually one of the ones that would is showing that the bad things that have happened to him in the past and the way he chooses to treat those things. It's really, really interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. And I think this is one of the things that I like about conversations, about podcasts, about books, about just relationships, really. It is this aspect of hearing somebody else share, you know, sharing from their internal world in a way that makes me go, huh. I have aspects of this. I can relate to this. Other things are so far away from anything I've ever experienced, either actually experienced or felt. It's like, but it widens my understanding of what it is to be human in a way.
Yes.
And I think that's why I read a lot. But I love biographies. I love historical fiction, either based in real, you know, real events, but fictionalized or pure fiction. But because I kind of get more and more nuanced in my understanding of what it is to be human. I love that.
Because, you know, you as a one person, you cannot experience everything in your life. And by listening to those different podcasts, by reading different books, we learn so much. I even recently was thinking, like, if I was considering to do 5 years of study, you know, like to learn something more. But I was like, I rather take all the books that they have listed there and plus many other ones that I will find on the way and read through those books than just go to a class and keep sitting there. It's like, I believe, yes, those people have a lot of things to say and sometimes they will be very smart things. But I'd rather just read those books, listen to podcasts from the people that I admire and I respect their opinion or the way how they think about the world or how they perceive it. So, it's interesting.
And one of the things that
I've been doing, throughout last year, and it will continue a couple of times this year, I've been reading Women Who Run With the Wolves by Clarissa Pinkola Estes mm-hmm. and having a book circle on each chapter,
mm-hmm.
me and my friend David, and just really digging into each chapter has mm-hmm. been amazing. And it is a book where each chapter easily warrants an hour or two of conversation and discussion mm-hmm. And going deep.
Yeah. I think I added that book to the list of the books that I want to read. And it was, I think, last year when I added it, and somehow I forgot about this, but now you say about it.
Yeah,
so
yeah, it's really a good one. And me and David, we're on chapter 13 now. It's 16 chapters, but then the notes section is equally rich. So maybe it'll be another one. And then I'm thinking that I want to continue going into depth in this particular book that way. So I will be starting a new book circle with people who want to join that.
Okay.
Because I am not done with this book. But also in my creative community, we have a book club. And the conversations around these books are just so... I love reading books with the right combination of people going into a book, you know, kind of kneading it and picking it apart a little bit and kind of shining a light on things because somebody says something and just blows my mind because I didn't pick up on that at all. And especially my creative community, the quality of conversation around our books that we've read in the book club are just mind-blowing. It is mind-blowing. And we, you know, so finding those people, getting into that type of constellation where, like you say, you can read a book or listen to a podcast or something and then
have a conversation
around it, I would say quality wise it is really, really nurturing. And yes, likely it will broaden your view and understanding of the world in ways that, unfortunately, I think a lot of university courses doesn't.
Yeah,
it should, and it could, and it does.
Yeah.
I know there are those that does. Mm. Not what I took when I went to university. I'm a biologist. I have a master's degree in biology. It's like, nah. That level of conversation, that level of you know, going into a topic and really shining a light from many different points. It's like, no, it doesn't really
happen. And actually seeing the perspectives of someone, as you said yourself, someone says something and you're like, wow, I didn't think about this this.
Yeah.
And that's interesting, you know, because, and it also shows a certain entry into assumptions, because we read through something, we assume, we create certain image in our head, and then in this specific environment you guys you are set up on discussion, you want to have that discussion, you're open to that discussion, so you're happy to hear that someone brings their own view and you're open to it. And I think this we learn to be open to different discussions, not only in the safe environment, but also sometimes in less maybe friendly environment with people who are not yet there, with the level of their conversation and openness to different topics and different experiences.
Very much precisely that, because we can have totally opposite views or beliefs or feelings about a thing, and in these conversations, I learn how to deal with
what arises in me and what I see in them, and, you know, so yeah. that when I go out into the world, outside of that kind of protected, safe space, I am better equipped. I'm resourced. Mm-hmm. I'm resourced to deal with when somebody comes and has a totally different understanding. You know,
yeah.
what if there's an accident? I bump into someone's car. They come out, you know,
screaming
at me. I will then, hopefully, be able to manage that in a better way, because I've mm-hmm. been in situations where, okay, here's somebody who has a completely different feeling and understanding yes. of something than I, and I know I can be in that, mm-hmm. which is kind of what Andy Puddicum, who's the creator of Headspace, the meditation app and company and stuff, he says that's kind of the point to meditation. It's not the 15 minutes that you meditate. It is the 23 hours and 45 minutes of the rest of the day
yeah.
when you can use what you've learned, the resources you've gotten from the meditation. Mm-hmm. That's the point of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of I was the same about here.
Yeah, yeah. I was about to say that it loops me back to this what Joko said in one of his podcasts. I think the number 10, it was number 10 was the podcast. So one of his first ones is that if we are in touch with our emotions, we are able to detach. And this will help us to start seeing others' perspective. You know, like this will open us to experiencing how other people see the world, how they perceive it. And I think that's really, really cool. And I'm by saying this, you're open to someone else's perspective. I'm not saying you have to take on that perspective, that you have to, like, I don't know, change completely the way you believe in things and change your systems and, you know, how you see the world. No, but just being open to have a conversation, not to just swing someone to a different side of seeing the things, but just to have a conversation, just to indulge in this kind of face for the mind, you know, that's really, really nice to do. But you can do it, like, I think you can do it only if you control how you act, how you behave, how you, like, if you know what emotions, like, sometimes what are your triggers, you know, like, if you understand those things, if you try to understand yourself, you will be able to take on others' perspective and be open to new things, even though they are not really, I don't know, how you say it? They are not your type of the things, yeah? Mm.
And triggers for me are so interesting in and of themselves, because it's like they are like wormholes in the universe, where, you know, a trigger is like a wormhole. If you actually go through it, you'll be in a completely different spot. But if you go, oh, that's a trigger, that's a wormhole, I'm going to stay here. Yeah, you won't evolve. That will always remain a trigger for you then.
And when you say go through it, what do you mean by this exactly?
I mean, try to understand it, try to see it, be with it, do the therapy, do the conversation, do the whatever it is that, you know, deal with whatever it is that has made this into a trigger, so that you can be in, you know, in relation with that thing without being triggered. Mm-hmm. So actually doing the work, in a sense.
Yeah, being responsible for the
precisely. Rather than what you know, what is really happening in large parts of, especially academia, I would say, in sort of university and college settings, is this aspect of this has to be a safe space where there are no triggers. It's like, fuck no. There needs to be more triggers because that's kind of the whole point to it. Precisely, because it's like, otherwise you could, how can you have a conversation in a university course around racism if racism in and of itself is a word that triggers half of the students?
Yeah, precisely.
It's like, sir, you can't. Either you have to deal with the fact that if you are triggered, you deal with that stuff and do that. And maybe you have to say, bye. I can't do this now. I have to deal with my triggered stuff first. Then I can come here and have a conversation about it, right?
Yeah.
That is taking ownership and responsibility for yourself.
Yes, precisely.
But saying, you can't talk about this because I get triggered. Sorry, I don't buy this.
Really, yeah, exactly. And you know, sometimes you have like this online talks and everything, and they say, well, this talk can be a trigger. I was like, well, yeah, but I'm mindfully getting into that conversation or getting into that online video course or whatever it is because I want to understand things more. Yeah, like it's, I really like, I feel like everything you know, everything you say, it's a trigger. That you're not allowed to say things because it's a trigger. And sometimes I say things because I would like to talk about this. I would like to expand my perspective on certain things, you know? And it's frustrating, you know? Like, you're right. Like, everything now is like, it's a trigger. Let's not talk about this because it's a trigger. Well, I think we should talk about this to find out what's the reason for that trigger.
Yeah.
And you know, as we earlier said, like that was kind of, I was reflecting on what we said about the book club, that I said that like it's a safe environment where you have a conversation. But I think, well, maybe in a way it's safe because you know the people and you know that no one has actually negative or bad intention by being there. Mm-hmm. They all want to discover things. And just this mindset makes you more open to have a conversation, even if their perspective is completely different to what is yours, even though their perspective may be a trigger, you know? Yeah. And and it's just not, I think not always we know that other people may not have a bad intentions. And always, but sometimes people don't control their emotions very well neither. And that takes over, like it takes over them, over what they will say, how they will act. And then this unpleasant environment is created where discussion is much harder. Talking about certain topics is much harder. But yeah, it's just, I don't know, I just was thinking about this, like, safe environment. What is the safe environment? And, like, why? Because I actually agree with you. It's good to be in unsafe environment because this allows you to face your fears or triggers. And I think you will be equipped better to deal with the things that future will bring to you by putting yourself in this uncomfortable environment.
Yeah, because that's when you can have the sticky conversations in a sense.
Yeah,
but you're again, it is a matter of how resourced am I? Because meditation, you know, it's good for most people. But there are those who are so traumatized where sitting still, silent for an hour and just being with your thoughts can, you know, wreak havoc with them. Absolutely get them into psychosis and or panic attacks, or you know, so because they are not resourced to deal with that, so for them meditation is a really bad idea. Now they need something else, and maybe over time they have dealt enough with their stuff so that meditation can become one of their resources. Right. So I think it's that's kind of the same thing. You know, if I've been raped, I can understand why being in a setting where it's spoken about or where it's shown on a TV screen, mm-hmm. or, you know, that that can trigger. If I haven't worked with that, if I haven't healed mm-hmm. my wound, if yeah. I haven't dealt with my trauma, absolutely. But then it is on me to make sure that I don't come into those situations. We can't mm-hmm. say that nobody can speak about rape, nobody can write about yeah. rape, nobody can make a movie about rape, because there are people who have experienced yeah. it and it yeah. will trigger them. And we can't yeah. have that.
No.
But absolutely, I'm not forcing anybody to sit yeah. and watch this movie about rape. Yeah. You know, that's not the thing. But so it is, again, this matter of honoring ourselves and honoring others and like taking responsibility yeah. for me, which it's like you say, when we are so trained to blame others or blame something, someone or something, of course it's easy to just put a flag, you know, a hand up and shout, I'm triggered, I'm
You'll
triggered.
You'll trigger me with this, yes.
And then use that as a way to shut something or someone up. And he's like,
yeah.
No,
it's your responsibility to deal with that, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And absolutely my responsibility, if you have one of those, it's like, and you say, I'd rather not talk about this. I don't have to keep pushing you.
No, exactly.
So I have to honor you in that too, of course, yeah. right? But that's kind of what this aspect of finding other people's perspectives on things, it kind of humbles, or at least it has made me more humble. I experience, maybe others disagree, right? Mm-hmm. But in just understanding that my point of view is my point of view, yeah. not necessarily the truth, capital T, but yeah. my point of view. You might have a completely
Precisely.
Other point of view. And there's
Precisely.
Like 7 billion other people who might have 7 billion
exactly.
other points of view.
Yeah, and I think you put out a good point that about honoring someone's boundaries, let's call it like this. I think it's important too, but as long as that person say, like, you know, look, I'm not comfortable talking about this right now. Maybe in the future we can discuss it, but I cannot do it right now. That's fine. Yes, but don't like cancel me, or don't make my thoughts invalid because you had certain experience. In this situation, when we talked about sexual assault, I'm lucky to not have that experience, and I can understand that to some degree. That since I didn't go through it, luckily, I somehow try to understand that it is traumatizing, and everyone knows that it is traumatizing, same as war is traumatizing, the things that happen there to people, the things that people see there. But it doesn't mean that, like, you know, that I need to be aware of every single thing that I say, it's a trigger, you know, like, I don't know what's your past, you know, like, you can kindly ask me to not, like, let's not talk about this right now, please, because I don't feel comfortable with it. But how this other person may know that what I went through is a trigger for me? Yes, like, they are not me, like,
no,
you know. So sometimes I think it's like we're living in the time where like it's a little bit annoying, you know, frankly, to know that everything you say may be seen as a bad thing by certain society or people or group of people, and they will just scream at you, telling you, well, you do not have, why do you say it? It's a trigger. It's like, you cannot talk about this. Well, I think if we don't talk about this, this becomes more taboo and becomes a bigger problem. But if we talk about this, if you try to understand this, if we try to see others' perspective, then maybe we will do a little bit better in the world.
And I mean, you with red cheeks, you've sure kind of dove right into that.
Yeah, precisely. And there's so much, like, the more I try to talk to people who are like not somehow related to, let's say, adult industry or to sex work, often people are scared. And it's not that they don't want to talk about this. They just think that it's something bad. And I think it's because for so long time in the society, we were like thought that intimacy is something we shouldn't be talking about. Sex is something we shouldn't be talking about. Not looking at it, not talking about it, but just to have kids, you know, like have sex to have kids and that's it. We weren't taught to talk about this in terms of feelings, in terms of how it shapes us, not talking about this.
Mm. And it is an aspect of this about boundaries that I think is interesting too, because I've, just speaking for me, me honoring my boundaries is not, hasn't been my strong suit, you know? Again, saying yes when I'm a no, saying no when I'm a yes, that is me not honoring my boundaries. Yeah. And that is my job. It is my job to honor my boundaries. It isn't your job to honor my boundaries. It's my job. I'm the one who have to make you see that, hey, enough is enough, or please, more of this.
Yes.
Right? It's like,
so ownership, ownership
again
of this.
So we come back to this ownership aspect of it all. Yeah. It's like I am the only one who knows. I am the only one who knows what it's like to be me. Where are my boundaries? What's okay and what's not okay with me? I'm the one who knows that. And that comes the continuing conversation about consent, for instance.
Yeah.
It's like that is part of that.
Yes,
being
communication.
In that.
Then we can understand each other. Then we can know, okay, like this person, like let's not talk about this because it just maybe at that moment better. But maybe in the future we can have a conversation about this. Yeah. Yeah.
So it does make for more.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, by opening these possibilities somehow, the possibility to have conversations about things that actually do trigger me if I'm resourced enough so that I can have them. It's like it turns multidimensional. The possibilities that are there just go woof, you know, exponentially multiplying, because I go from this narrow, we can only talk about this, to widening it, and all of a sudden, you know, I can talk about all sorts of things that I had no clue that I wanted to talk about, but now that we're doing it, it's kind of fun.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of freeing, I think, from my perspective at least, you know, when I know that I was able to face my fears, and now I can actually talk about this, and having a sane approach toward those fears, having like broader approach to them, this makes me feel more free.
Yeah, well, that's a good place to be. Maybe that's a perfect place to end this
today.
More freedom.
Exactly.
And you come to the freedom by taking ownership of me, my experience of being me in the world, how I am in the world, how I express myself in the world, who I surround myself with. Is it people and things and environments that serve me or not? You know, it's like what's guiding me into a place where we're all feelings are allowed.
Yes.
because yes. they are a part of us. But like you say, if my feelings and my emotions are in control of me, I'm just like a tumbleweed, you know, it's yes. like I don't have any. But if I'm the one who's like, oh, here's this feeling, I can feel it. I don't have to react on it. Mm-hmm. That is freedom.
Yes.
That is freedom.
Precisely. Yeah. The ownership of the feelings and emotions. Yeah.
Good. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you. And I see you in a month, I think.
Or
oh, yeah, like we that. Need to come up with one date.
We do.
Precisely. Well, have a lovely day, and I talk to you soon.
Yeah, the same. See you around.
Thank you very much. Ciao, ciao.
Bye.
Ciao. Bye.